Big weekend, too, for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Montreal Canadiens are in town. Big Saturday night. Fans already tweeting us saying they're in town for the game. People traveling in. It's a destination matchup.
Yes. Desperation from the team coming in, too.
No kidding.
Not pretty for those guys right
now. Love the energy inside the Air Canada Centre when the Habs visit, I have to admit. Although I will say this. When I was with Leafs TV, we used to do our pre- and post-game shows from the Air Canada Centre. Without fail, there were always, like, you saw security running somewhere, cops, ambulance, to break up something. There was always a fight of some sort. Somebody got injured, some kind. It was like, you know, got a little ridiculous like that. But the energy was still good.
Imagine if they ever met in the playoffs.
Oh. No.
You know what? There's a lot of... Last night, there's quite a few Ranger fans there. I was surprised.
Yeah.
It's that time of year. People get excited. You know that football's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And...
No baseball,
I think people,
yet.
Yeah, like baseball hasn't started. People, I think, are more willing to travel to go and watch exactly what they want to see.
Well, and Toronto's a great city.
Oh, of course.
Let's just be honest. So if you're going to want to cheer on your team, which, especially when your team is in a playoff fight as well, both
close
teams.
Too.
Yeah,
like, you
it's
know,
close.
It may be a lot easier for some Rangers fans that live just across the border to come and watch them play in Toronto than it would be to try, you know, you got to go to Manhattan. That's a pain in the ass to get tickets there. Also a pain.
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing with I don't want to complain about the atmosphere at the ACC. I think that's been covered by a lot of different people. But MSG is all suits, too. But they're drunk and they're loud. And it's the complete opposite of the suits that sit in the lower bowl at the ACC.
It's very true. I try to put my finger on it each and every time I'm at the Air Canada Centre to try and understand why it isn't loud. Because... To your point, I see a lot of those people because if you're in the platinum seats, underground, that's where their little rooms are, you know, where they're having their food and their drink.
I think they should close those places.
But they are loaded. Like, these guys are having a time.
Oh, yeah.
But for some reason, it doesn't translate when they come back out into the seats.
No.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Anyways, got to figure that one out. But even though it was a low-scoring game, it was a great game, high energy. 2-1 overtime loss to the New York Rangers last night for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs are now 22-1-8 when leading after two periods. 10 points, bye-bye. And I say squandered because they were leading after two periods. So you talk about the Montreal Canadiens. So Montreal Canadiens right now leading the Atlantic. So they lead the Atlantic with 72 points. If the Leafs held on to those 10 points, they'd have 78.
I know. So let's say it's 5. Even if it's 5, look how much of a better spot they're in right now.
Yikes. And again, it's one thing to, like, it hurts more when, let's just say, the Leafs were trailing after two periods, I should say, and they managed to tie it up and force OT or whatever, and they still lose. Then you're like, well, you see it as a point gain because you were trailing heading into the final frame, and you managed to tie it up and get that whatever point. But the fact that it's the other way around, that's where you're looking at it and going, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and it's... I don't want to say it's a complete waste of what Anderson did because they obviously got the 1 point, and that's big.
Like, oh, no, don't we will be praising Anderson today, my friend.
Of course you will. You don't want to lose sight of the fact that that point they got last night is huge. But to be leading, like you said, in that third period when you don't really deserve to be and your goalie's been the best player on either team and you still... Like, I'd like to see them, although, I mean, they have a... The breakaways both ways. It's hard to be more aggressive than they were in overtime. But when you know you're that bad in the shootout.
Give it all you got.
I'd air it out even more.
Yeah.
Because Anderson is really not good in shootouts.
1-7 this year in the shootout.
He has as many saves as he has goals that have gone in. That is really, really bad. If you're a goalie, you should be 70% plus. Because as a shooter... The elite shootout guys are over 40%. That's hard to do. And it's tough for the Leafs because they know, you know you're in a bad spot in shootouts when you know as a team you need to score twice. When you're relying on your shooters to win you shootouts, you're not going to win them.
Yeah. I mean, it's true because when you see the Leafs...
not to cut you off here, but I keep seeing people say the shootout is stupid. Who cares? Well, it is stupid, but guess what? You're going to make or miss the playoffs potentially.
Yeah.
And it's part of the way they settle games in this league, so you need to figure it out. You can call it stupid and not like it, but it's part of the NHL, and teams will miss because of it.
Well, to your point, so if they're 1-7, those are 7 points in the shootout alone.
Right.
That have been lost. 7 points, that would.
Like, you got to, it's like, it's the same, you got to look at OT and shootouts the same way you would look at what you want from your backup goalie. The teams that make the playoffs are 500. Your backup needs to be 500, and you need to split the OT shootout stuff because OT certainly is a crapshoot. So you think odds are you end up 50-50 near the end anyways. And like it or not, the shootout plays a big role.
Well, and I was asking you this too as well. Like, yes, no doubt, Frederik Andersen needs to be better in the shootout. But I was trying to remember the last time, like, even the Leafs, you know, going 3-for-3. Right? Like, there's always been a shooter who's missed. Like, it's on both sides for sure. But yes, one can also feed off the other. If you see your goalie let in a goal, you're like, oh, crap, maybe you're a little bit more nervous going in for your shot.
If you score one in the first three, you should have another opportunity to get, you're going into that fourth round. That's typically the way it is. So if you're letting in two out of the first three, it's not a good combination because clearly the Leafs shooters aren't great either.
All right. Well, as you mentioned, they get a point. And if you want to look at a positive, the Leafs were in it in a very low-scoring, tight game where the Leafs typically are a team that like to trade chances, right? They're not defensively strong, but they can outscore their mistakes. So the fact that they get one goal last night and hold on until the third period. So you're looking at that, and I mean, if you're trying to see a glass half full, well, there it is. They hung in and still got a point in a game that isn't typically their style. I mean, if you were to look right now, I have their schedule pulled up in front of me. The last time there was a 2-1 game, that was St. Louis. That was also a T. So that was on the 9th. Other than that, it's been 5-4, 4-0, 6-3. You know, the Leafs scoring 7, 3. Like, you're looking at games where there are a lot of goals.
Yeah. A couple things. Last night could have been, the goaltending was really, really good on both sides. So there were chances, but I think the important thing to understand is it's okay if you're a goalie to be your best player. And when you're in a tight game, to be able to feel the way that feels and still play the right way to get even into overtime, because I had a bad feeling being in that building that the Rangers were going to score again in regulation. And then that's really tough to deal with. So I think it's good. I think they played a team who plays a counter-punching style if you want to make mistakes in the neutral zone. And the Leafs overall were pretty decent. They spent some time in their own end, but that's going to happen. This is one of the few teams the Leafs will play against that probably has better depth up front than they even have. So they dealt with a difficult situation pretty well. I mean, they didn't have... The best thing about last night is obviously Freddie, but you got a point in a game where you didn't have even your B-plus game. I'd say a B-minus game for the Leafs, and you get a point against a team that's better than you, higher than you in the standings. You have to take that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit more about this 2-1 overtime loss, or sorry, shootout loss, I should say, to the New York Rangers as we get to the grades of the game.
It's time to find out who made the grade. This is Leafs Lunch. Grades of the Game.
Grades of the Game brought to you by Borrowwell.com, Canada's leading online provider of personal loans and free credit scores. Okay, so because my grades, no surprise, we're giving an A to Freddie Andersen, baby.
I don't even think about goalies when I do.
Yeah, because you know they're off limits. Just... Although I should give an honorable mention also to Lundqvist if we're going to talk about goalies, because he also came up big in OT. I mean, you had Leo Komarov with a breakaway. You had Austin Matthews with a breakaway.
It's
jeez.
He's a guy, too, where he sees what Anderson's doing on the other end, and he realizes, okay, I got to raise my level here because he's not letting anything in. My team's not going to get anything easy, so I better be good. Especially in the second period, the Leafs started to come on early in the third. The Leafs were the better team there, and he was solid.
He looked good, but Sorry, Lundqvist. I got to give my A to Frederik Andersen facing 38 shots. And that save on Grabner. So this is how I also know the Leafs are really exciting to watch this time of year. Because I watch Leafs games now for work, I have to watch them by myself. I don't want any distractions. I don't talk to people because I sit, I watch the game, I take my notes. Mm-hmm. If there's something that I want to compare, reference, whatever, now I'm on the computer, I'm researching. Everything is like I'm locked in. I don't talk to anybody. My dog even knows. Don't even ask me to go pee because you go before the game, you go after the game because I'm locked in for the 2.5 hours. But I had friends over last night, and I forgot. Like, you don't – it really is exciting to watch them because when you're watching with other people, like, we're all jumping up at the same time. We're screaming at the same time. And when Freddie made that save – we were all snapping. Like, we didn't know. First of all, it was so quick. I thought Connor Brown actually made the save. Like, I thought he got across the crease. Yeah. I didn't realize Freddie got it. I'm like, rewind, slow-mo, what the heck just happened there? Loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And I'm grading him based on regulation and OT because your right shootout needs a little work.
Yeah, that's not hockey, though.
Yeah, so forget that. But to me, he's getting my A. I'm still going to continue giving love to Komarov. I'm going to give him a B. I felt like he was, he's a menace. Like, he gets under skin. He creates chances. I don't know if it's now because, you know, they've got somebody else with them. Like, they keep changing things up. I know he played with Brown and Levo is just creating things. I don't know if that's just giving him a certain kind of life, but he seems to have more offensive chances while still being that hard-hitting guy. And I, as I mentioned, breakaway in OT. Babcock still seems to love Komarov in OT. And I know a lot of people say, why are you putting a guy like that out mostly when you should go out there and score and whatever? But he still makes things happen.
Well, that's the wrong way to think, because he thinks in a way to get himself into position to get a breakaway. If you're good, if you're really good defensively, you should be pretty capable offensively if you have enough skill, and he does. He's starting to create more offense because Kadri's clearly taken a big step this year. I think he's confident. Now Kadri's more consistent game to game. And I think those two have been better with Levo, better than any other line mate they've had all year. So it's interesting when Marner comes back. What do they do? Obviously you put Marner back with Bozak and JVR. Now you have Connor Brown. Is he a fourth-line player?
Because I think we've all agreed that it would probably be Soshnikov who comes out.
Right, but then that means Brown has to play on the fourth line. So it's a good problem to have if you're the coach. I'm sure he loves it, but it is interesting.
No, it is, but I'm going to give him a little bit of love because I think, you know, slow start to the season. If you remember, Babcock was kind of joking where Komarov ordered a whole bunch of new sticks because, of course, the sticks have to be the problem, which, by the way, and I know the Leafs iced it, but and I know Babcock ended up losing his mind afterwards, where the ref didn't allow Komarov to go and change his stick. I guess they see it as it was a stall tactic because the ref follows him to the bench.
You have to prove it, right?
I guess that's what. But he followed him to the bench and just like yanked him right away, yanked the stick out of his hand. He's like, no, cannot change. Go right away. But you're right. Like, to me, he didn't check the stick. Now, Komarov didn't make a stink. Well, it's not like he said, look, I got a broken stick.
So if his stick was broken, he would have showed him, or you lean on it and break it so that now you know. No, I'm saying, like, if it's, if you know it's going to break. Like, I'm not saying you go to the bench and try to break a stick.
Snap it over your knee.
Right.
Look, it's broken.
So the refs, they're smart. And he's a veteran guy. He's also smart. The whole him going to the bench and causing a scene is enough of a stall
it's
anyways,
perfect.
Right? So you just push it enough to where the ref doesn't drag you and put you in the box.
So I also love that.
Yeah.
I love
he's a valuable player. He really is. He does a lot of different things. And when he's starting to contribute more offensively, he's a key player for this team.
So there you go. Those are my grades. What do you got?
I'll go with the first grade I have is for Freddy the Goat. It looked like he had some extra food at the petting zoo yesterday. Like some extra, you know, when you put the quarter in the machine and you get the pellets and you feed them when you go to the petting zoo. Someone gave Freddy the Goat some extras yesterday. He was skating really well.
Yeah.
I put a tweet out jokingly saying put him on the power play, but it really wouldn't have been a bad idea the way that was going as well. But he was skating. He was terrible in the faceoff circle. If you want to argue why he should be in the lineup over Ben Smith is also bad at taking faceoffs. That's a job that the coach, and again, this is the coach and what he thinks matters more than anybody else. The coach wants that guy to be able, that position, the fourth line center, to be able to take faceoffs and kill penalties. I think he's a better player than Ben Smith already. I think he makes Matt Martin better. Mm-hmm. I think that fourth line is better when he's on the ice and Ben Smith is not. I thought he was effective last night.
I really liked him. And it was just as I was watching him saying, for such a big body, I wish he would just use it more. He goes and crashes Lundqvist.
Yeah, he's not mean.
No, he's not mean. I mean, but I wish I could see a little bit more of a mean streak.
Yeah, and maybe that comes when he gets a little more confidence. I don't know. All I know is he's better than the other guy who has mm-hmm. recently been playing over him. So,
and I've said it. Freddie's your future. Like, Gauthier's your... I feel like he's your future on this team, so why not give him that? Now, he's got to prove, and he's got to show that he deserves to be here, but if he's doing that, then why would you take him out? You leave him in.
Yeah, I think he's already... He maybe needs... They want him to be better, but he's already better than the guy who mm-hmm. you have anyways. But again, that's not up to us who plays. My other grade is for the power play. F minus 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 F. Terrible.
Just rip the test up in half. That's what you do with that one. That was bad.
It was really, really bad. And it's something that obviously the Leafs use to their advantage quite often. But at home, their power play is 14th in the league. Yesterday, it probably dropped it down a slot or two because they were obviously got nothing done on it. They couldn't even get in the zone. They love the drop pass breakout that every other team loves too. And that's fine if you do it right. And if you're doing it against the penalty kill that lets it happen. Well, last night the Rangers adjusted to where they basically would just back up four guys. So the drop pass is just a drop pass to someone who's, there's no deception to it. Mm-hmm. They weren't biting on it and pursuing it. They just would back up. So you have to go to something else once in a while to show that you have other looks. So they had a tough time even getting in the zone, and when they did, you have to credit the other team, too. They have a say in everything that goes on. But for having the best power play in the league, and on the road, it's such a weapon. At home, it's bad. Like, it should be the other way around. It's rare when it's that your special teams are better, and they both are for the Leafs on the road.
That is strange.
I don't know if that's a youth thing. Or I don't know. It's hard to say because I think it's rare. And on the flip side, the second best special teams team road on the road is the Rangers. They also have the most road wins. So what happened last night was the Leafs played a really good road team. You saw the details in their game. They simplify. Mm-hmm. Their Rangers are hard to play against because their top three lines, on any given night, it's much like the Leafs. Any given night, you know, one steps up. So if you're a coach who likes matchups, which Babcock does, you really don't know what to think coming into the game. You kind of have to wait the first 10 minutes to see who's going on the other side, and then you have to adjust around that again.
Now, the drop pass, we've talked about this before, and I know a lot of people were hammering Jake Gardner, saying, why does he keep doing that? Why does he keep doing that? And we came to his defense because it's not... He's not making that decision. It's their system. It's their play.
Yeah, no, that's what they're supposed to do.
That's what they're supposed to do. So, but if anything, the coaches need to change it up.
Yeah, but the guy carrying the puck, so if it's Gardner or Zaitsev on the other unit, if no one is biting, then you have to. There is another option there. So they need to be able to adjust to that. I want to say, too, again, Hanwick and Polak were good last night, again.
Yeah.
This is like six or seven games in a row now where those guys have been solid.
Hanwick lose a tooth last night? Something. Took a stick to the face.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't.
But I couldn't tell if those were already missing teeth or if another one got knocked out.
You never know.
Because I'm like, he's already missing some. Was it added to the collection or not? But yeah, he took a stick to the face and was at the bench getting a little
The last 10 games, work. The last 10 games, the top three is the issue, not the bottom three. We'll see if that...
All right, so those are our grades of the game, brought to you by Borrowell.com. Do you know your financial grade? With digital innovator Borrowell.com, you can check your credit score for free and get approval on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get traded today. graded, I should say, not traded. You know what? I'm thinking about trade deadline.
Oh, yeah, it's on your mind.
Get graded today at Borrowell.com. Yes, because we are going to talk trade talk with our TSN hockey insider, Bob McKenzie, who's going to join us. I mean, I don't know. Is Kevin Shattenkirk going to end up a New York Ranger? Is this why he's apparently turning down deals that have already been offered? And are the Leafs still really in on the Shattenkirk conversation? We'll discuss all of that next with Bob McKenzie as you continue to listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050 and streaming online today, tsn.ca. Welcome back into Leafs Lunch. We're on TSN 1050 and streaming online today, tsn.ca. We'll be back on the TVs next week. Andy Petrillo alongside Patrick O'Sullivan. I got trade on my mind. Because apparently, not just March 1st, but today you can get traded today. Whoops. I don't think there's a lot of players who want to get traded today.
There's worse slips to have.
Well, this is true. Let's welcome in our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. That's our new slogan. Get traded today. We're already thinking about March 1st. I want to ask, though, about Kevin Shattenkirk, because this seems to be a name that, A, is not, you know, really going away, but there's all these little developing stories around it. Now we're hearing that a team believed to have been the Tampa Bay Lightning may have offered him the 6 years, $42 million, and turned it down. And obviously now the St. Louis Blues have to shop him definitely as a rental if there isn't a trade and sign situation that's going there. And are they asking too much? And some people are saying the Leafs still in the conversation. But are they if the price is that high, which is believed to be a first rounder and a prospect?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I'd be very, very surprised. As I say, I think I've said it for a while now. The Leafs are putting a value on making the playoffs this year. That's not to suggest that they're saying, oh, we got to sacrifice our future to try and make the playoffs. It's so important to us. No, they're looking at it and saying it would be really good for all our young kids to make the playoffs, to play playoff games. That is going to accelerate their development as high-end players, and it's going to make us a better team for years to come if we can make these playoffs. But so if we can give ourselves a chance to do that without going nuts and sacrificing really key assets, then let's do it. But I think they draw the line at first-round pick even, and that would be my sense of it. I mean, you know, would they have interest if Brian Boyle were available to Tampa? Absolutely they would. Would they be willing to give up a first-round pick? I don't think so. So in that case, you know, maybe they're not really in it in terms of these rentals, but I think they have interest in a lot of these players because they think it would help them get to where they want to get to, which is the playoffs.
How sure is anyone, I guess, that Shattenkirk is going to actually get traded? Like, do you think there's a chance he doesn't move?
There's a chance, but I would say there's a much greater chance that he gets traded. I guess it really comes down to what exactly Doug Armstrong gets offered. And, I mean, if it's a bag of magic beans, no, he doesn't. But if he does get his first-round pick in a prospect,
I think
of
I got
some
traded
kind,
for that once, Bob.
No, I don't know about that, Patrick. But
there could be gold there, too.
Magic yeah, you never beans. Know. Magic beans, yeah. It's not to say they don't have some value.
Lead you to a magical land.
But, I think the Blues have recognized that, especially on, you know, the way they play Shattenkirk, is he an important player? Yes. Is he absolutely vital to what they're doing? Maybe not. They've got Petrangelo, they've got Bouwmeester, they've got Parayko. They've got some depth at that position. And, would they miss his offense? Yeah, I'm sure they would. Is it the difference between winning the Stanley Cup or not making the playoffs? Probably not. And so I think after letting Backes and Brouwer walk last year for nothing, and rightfully so, they thought they had a team that could win it all, and those two guys were key getting them as far as they did, which was to the conference final, that maybe they're not as inclined. And I mean, it's not like it's, you know, they're suddenly throwing all, you know, all the bodies overboard here. Patrick Berglund is on an expiring contract. I think they're going to try and get a deal done with him. But even if they don't get the deal done with him, I'd be really surprised if they traded him at the deadline as a rental. And I'd be really surprised if they kept Shattenkirk beyond the deadline.
Do you think people forget that when a player leaves your team that you still have money to use? Like it doesn't mean you have completely, like you don't have anything at all when a guy walks away. You do. You have the money that he was going to make.
Yep. Yeah, and I think more and more in hockey we're starting to realize that. That was for years the baseball mentality. They didn't even – nobody even batted an eye holding on to a guy who was on an expiring contract that you knew there was no chance you were going to sign. Baseball teams would routinely and regularly do that. And I think even in basketball, there's probably that it was a more accepted way of doing business. In hockey, it was always like, ooh, we don't want to lose the guy for nothing. But in a salary cap world, that cap space that you're getting when he walks away for nothing is paramount to what you're doing, and it's got huge value. So you can rationalize it on that basis, but it really depends too on the circumstance. And for me, it always ends up coming back to weighing what exactly it is you're being offered versus what exactly your upside is if you keep this guy.
Well, and when it comes to Shattenkirk, he also has say because he has a no trade clause. And if you're a Blues fan, I know it can be frustrating because it's starting to, last year there was a deal apparently with the Edmonton Oilers. Shattenkirk shot it down. Now there's apparently this deal with Tampa shooting it down because I guess he has it in his head where he wants to go. But I mean, I don't blame the player. This is his power. He has a no trade. He has every right to decide where he wants to go. And as frustrating as it may be for the Blues, I don't hold it against Shattenkirk at all.
Well, technically, he doesn't have a no trade, but he does in the unofficial sense. The reason he's controlling the situation to some degree here is the fact that he is unrestricted at the end of the year. And some of these trades that the Blues have tried to make on three occasions that we're aware of, that, those were deals that contingent on signing him to a contract. So that's where he gets to exercise a veto and say, no, I'm not going to go. But he has he does not have no trade protection in the sense that if the Blues get an offer tomorrow, they can send him anywhere they want as a rental for the balance of the season. He can't control that whatsoever.
Okay.
But you're right. He's had a virtual no trade on any team that was doing a deal with the Blues with a mind towards signing, doing basically a sign and trade or a trade and sign, whatever order you want to put it in. But and you're absolutely right. He's entitled. He doesn't have to do his July shopping now. You get to be a free agent. Most guys, you only get to be a free agent maybe once in their in their primary wheelhouse of their career. And this is Shattenkirk's, it's on a tee and he's ready to hit a home run. So he wants to pick the perfect city, the perfect team, and the perfect contract. And obviously, whatever was offered to the St. Louis Blues by any of the three teams that talked to them wasn't perfect in his mind, or as close to perfect as he thinks he might get on July 1. So until he gets that, why would he do it? And everybody imposes their own value system. They say, well, if Tampa was the team that made an offer 6 weeks ago and they offered him 7 years at $6 million a year in Tampa, that's like $7 million a year in New York City. If he wants to go to New York on July 1, he may, his net pay would have been better in Tampa than it would be in New York. So why is he doing this? This is stupid. Well, that's his call. He gets to choose the city. He gets to choose the dollar. He gets to take his gross pay, his net pay, the structure of the contract. Who knows? Maybe he wants it all front end loaded and some team couldn't do that. There are a myriad reasons why a player looks favorably on one situation and might not look favorably on another. And the unknown maybe is enticing to him because the unknown may be better than what the known that was on the table. But that's his call, and he's perfectly entitled to do that.
Yeah, didn't he take extra insurance out on himself too? Because he's coming into this situation where, it's a big risk. It's a big risk.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure on that, Patrick. You may well be right. I seem to recall something along those lines, but I don't specifically know.
And as far as the Leafs are concerned with Shattenkirk, my personal thought, and again, this is just me, and I'll ask you this question, Bob, but my opinion, unless Gardner was going the other way, I let's put it this way. I don't think you want both Gardner and Shattenkirk in your top four.
That's been an argument that's been made here for a while about Shattenkirk, that on the St. Louis Blues, he's called a top four defenseman because they've got Petrangelo, they've got Bomister, they've got Parayko. And he's the next highest profile guy when you look at his numbers and what his salary is ultimately going to be when he goes to free agency. But there are those who would say, if you're just looking at it strictly based on five-on-five play, St. Louis is able to hide him in five-on-five situations, but because he's so good offensively, he's got a dimension that certainly qualifies him as a top four defenseman in the National Hockey League, but that he's not really able to play in all top four situations, especially when it's five on five and defending. So, you know, you can get hung up on all of that. I don't know if I would necessarily long term, I would tend to agree with you. The bigger issue for me with Shattenkirk long term with the Leafs is that, is the dollars you would have to allocate to him versus allocating to other players on the team and how it might hamstring you for, you know, six, 7 years down the road. But I could see Gardner and Shattenkirk being on the same defense team, because Shattenkirk's upside as that, you know, power play specialist would probably give him a unique trait that's better than anything the Leafs currently have. And I think you can try to find a way to work around the what I'm sure you're alluding to, which would be the defensive aspect of the game.
Yeah, well, and it's also the money that Shattenkirk, if he comes to the Leafs, he's getting 7x7.
Yeah, see, and I don't think, I could be wrong on this, I'm just giving an opinion. I don't think the Leafs have any interest whatsoever in Shattenkirk on the long haul.
I don't either. Mm.
I think, you know, if they could sneak in at the end here and, you know, give not a first round pick to get him, but I don't think that's going to happen. I almost wonder if the Blues would keep him before they would just give him away for a second or a third round pick. But I mean, he should get a lot more than the Blues should get a lot more than that. I mean, Hainsey went for a second, and Stone went for a third. And in each of those cases, the reason the draft picks were as significant as they were for depth defensemen was because the trading team that was getting rid of the player was taking on half the salary. So we'll see where it goes with Shattenkirk.
I know he's injured and we all have to be patient. You hearing anything on Mitch Marner at all, out of curiosity?
No, just other than, you know, he was out skating hard this morning well before the team. You heard Babcock's comments yesterday, and I heard Patrick's comments post-game last night where, you know, that would seem to indicate that we're less likely to see him than more likely to see him tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who knows? Tomorrow's a new day. You wake up, and they're obviously waiting for medical clearance. That was the intimation I got. Mm-hmm. Didn't you, Patrick, from Babcock? Well, you know, sounds like, well, Mitch wants to play, and I want him to play, but that's why we don't let coaches and players make these decisions. It's up to the medical team to decide when he plays. So, and they are going to err on the side of caution, mm-hmm. because they're talking about a meal ticket here, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, what are we coming up almost on 2 weeks probably?
He missed the weekend, and then the rest of the games this week. So here's the thing with Mitch Marner. It's really funny because out of nowhere, and three people now have kind of been coming at me about Olympic talk. And, you know, yesterday I had some friends over watching the game, and just, you know, out of the blue, one friend's like, hey, if NHLers go to Pyeongchang in 2018, do you think Mitch Marner would make the Canadian team? And my gut instinct right away was, well, no, I think he'd be a lock 2022, but I don't know about 2018 because there's so many good players. And then on Twitter, again, somebody's like, well, Mike Babcock's the head coach of Canada. You know, do you think Mitch Marner would be on the team? And I mean, I don't know. What would you think if the NHLers do end up going in 2018? Because you have to think Matthews for sure would be a lock for U.S. I would think Nylander would be a lock for Sweden. So if we're looking at the young guys on this team, where do you think Mitch Marner is with Team Canada?
Andy, I'm only going to answer this question the only way I know how. This is one of the favorite questions that the quizmaster likes to ask. Not even just for a quiz, he likes entire segments. Let's project the 2022 Beijing team.
Hey, we're doing deadline.
He used to ask me all the time, "Would you do a projection on that?" I go, "No, I don't do projections." And inevitably, Craig Button or somebody would do it for him, but I won't. And only because I don't have time to really think about a reasoned, intelligent answer. Mm-hmm. That stuff takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I could give you pull one out of my backside and say, oh, yeah, for sure he should be there, or no chance. And then later I'd think about it and say, oh, that was a dumb answer in a short period of time. So I don't know. He's a really good player. I think he's going to be elite if he's not already. And 2018, and I will say this to those that would suggest that, well, if Babcock's the coach, Babcock also favors guys that have done it for him before. Although in the last Olympics or the World Cup, even that was an older team. There were a lot of older guys on that team, and people were surprised that Babcock didn't turn it over more. But he's a big believer in, if you were around last time and you still got a pulse and you look like a pretty good player, you're coming back this time. But maybe just on the sheer age that there would be a greater turnover this time. So I don't think that answers your question, but that's fine because I don't have – my job's like guerrilla warfare. I mean, you don't spend more than 45 seconds on anything. If anything takes longer than 5 minutes to figure out, I got no time for it.
Yeah, so you don't give predictions, you don't give projections. Okay, so I'm going to write that down and make sure I know for future.
The quizmaster has a very – he says we should – put a list together of the things that you actually do because it's a lot
shorter
than the things you don't do. But that also comes with, I'm going to be honest with you. I turned 60 in August, and once you turn 60, you get a lot more FU currency, and it's a lot more of like, well, you know what? No, I don't want to do that. So I'm not going to do that. And I'm 60 and I don't have to do it.
You've earned that right, my friend. Yeah. I will not argue with you on that. You keep doing what you're doing, but yeah, it's worth a discussion. I know Sully and I will continue it afterwards because you're right. You have to think about so many things. I mean, Chris Kunitz made the 2014 Olympic team, but we know he made it because Sidney Crosby plays really well with him, and it was just a great combination. So sometimes it doesn't necessarily mean who's the best player right now in the NHL. It's, you know, who works well with whom. But we'll discuss that later. Before we let you go, though, I did want to ask, still on this whole theme of trade deadline, the Leafs taking on the Montreal Canadiens tomorrow. Do you think the Habs are going to be pretty active?
Boy, if they're not, Michel Bergeron, he's long gone. Yeah, he's in real trouble. It's all Michel Bergeron. Speaking of being 60, yeah. I just had a senior moment. That's the other thing that happens when you're 60. The wires get crossed a lot more often. But Marc Bergevin, if Bergevin doesn't do anything, man, oh, man, it's going to be a real uncomfortable stretch drive for the Canadiens, especially if they continue to look as bad as they did last night against the New York Islanders. I almost think he's got to step up to the plate and do something. But and I was on Montreal radio this morning talking to Tony Marino, and I said, or is it so bad? Is what he's seeing so bad that he's just like, I'm not going to panic right now and make a move I'm going to regret later. I'm going to wait until we see how we finish the year. And if I have to blow this thing up and start trading core guys and rejig this whole thing, then that's what I'll do. But I almost think if I had to pick one or the other, which way he's going to go, I got to believe the Canadians are more likely to make a trade before Wednesday than sit on their hands and do nothing. I'm not sure how you could justify doing nothing other than the deals are just so awful that you know you'd be shooting yourself in the head by making one. But when you make the Weber for Subban, when you bring Radulov in, when you bring Shaw in, when you turn over the number of guys you turned over and you've got a healthy Carey Price for the whole season, and your Carey Price alibi went out the window with his good health this season. How do you just tell the people of Montreal, yeah, well, things went off the rails for us again, and we're not sure why, so we'll reevaluate at the end of the year. That's a tough one to sell.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Either way, it's going to be a great matchup. Every time the Habs are in town, ACC is buzzing. Thanks for taking the time, Bob.
Thanks, guys.
That is Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets. Yeah, it's strange. Suddenly this Olympic talk just kind of came out of nowhere. And, not out of, but in the sense that in the last 24 hours,
strange.
People asking me about Mitch Marner, I'm like, wow, was something said somewhere that I was unaware of? But anyways, it's interesting because if we look at the young guys on this team, and the three guys who've been stealing the headlines have been Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and two of them, like I said, you'd have to think are locks for their Olympic team if NHLers go. But where does that leave Mitch Marner? I mean, is the Canadian team, it's got that much depth that would he be on the outside looking in for 2018? Because if he continues to play the way he's playing, I would think he's a lock 2022.
Yeah. I would agree with that. But 2018, yeah, I mean, I think he's in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think if they won't have a summer camp, but if they did, I think he would be at that. I'd say he's in the top 18 forwards, if that means anything. I think he's been that good. The problem with the Canadian team is they have so many centers. And they're so good that they just play him on the wing.
Yeah, we were looking at their World Cup roster.
You know, as a right winger, you can make the team. But then look at who didn't play on the World Cup team and like Ben Sagan, those guys are going to be on the team.
Yeah, they were up because of injury.
It's a hard. Jonathan Drouin would be a guy that Mitch Marner's competing with.
Connor McDavid.
Well, he's on the team.
Yeah, you got to think he's a
lock to
make
it. Second line center on that team. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think if you're a Leafs fan and you're wondering about that, I would say that he's in the conversation, by no means a lock. The good news is he's going to have half a season to play next year before they would make that decision. So he's got time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's interesting because you look at this team, and there are guys who are getting older, but as Bob pointed out, Babcock likes to remain loyal if the guys can still perform. Like, if I were to look at guys getting older, I would just look at a Getzlaff, and I'm looking at the World Cup roster, guys who made the World Cup roster. You know, I am looking at a Getzlaff, so it's like, okay, fine. So if Getzlaff's not there, if Joe Thornton's not there.
Jeff Carter didn't play either. He'll be on the team.
And that's the thing. And then, yeah, the way Drouin's been playing, Carter's been playing, McDavid. You're like, geez.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's a great problem to have, but it sucks if you're Mitch Marner.
Right. When you really look at it up close, there's about two or three spots that seven or eight guys are going to compete for, and the rest of it's locked up. So you could say you could get rid of, so McDavid, Joe Thornton. Let's say Thornton. I don't see him playing.
Mm-hmm.
So that, but there's McDavid. So now his spot's full. So you have stuff like that go on, and you don't really get any further with the conversation because guys just keep showing up. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you keep Jeff Carter off that team? But you're right.
There was an uproar when he was kept off.
Well, he was injured this time.
Yeah. No, but the Olympics,
yeah,
right?
So it's that's what happens with when you have as many good players as Canada has. But that group, that Getzlaff, Perry, Bomeister, Keith, like those are all guys early, mid-30s. Like those are all guys that are around my age. And, I mean, they've been doing it a long time, playing internationally. And I think there will be a bit more of a turnover. There's some young guys that are just too good to deny them the spot. And I think Marner may put them in a situation where it's like, we don't have a choice. We have to take this kid if that means Corey Perry has to stay home or whoever, then tough luck.
And the Olympics is ruthless. The Olympics isn't about, at least in my opinion, it's a win now situation. You're not, you know, okay, so this guy has to make the team out of respect,
or
this young guy has to make the team because we're developing for the next Olympics. No. The Olympics, it's your one chance. You win now. There's no paying homage to the past. There's no getting ready for the future. You put the team that's going to make you win now.
And if we've learned anything watching Canada play the last decade, even back to 2002, you take your best players and you don't try to fit, oh, we need a checker. Like, we're going to take a Chris Draper to the Olympics. Like, you know,
it's different.
The mistake that was made in 98, you saw how that played out. The U.S. just made the same mistake at the World Cup. You pick your best guys, they're so good that they can adjust.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Like, if Patrice Bergeron has to play 10 minutes a night, he'll do it because he wants to win again.
Yeah. You'd have to think for Team USA, Phil Kessel, I think, would be on that Olympic team. We've got more coming up here on Leafs Lunch. The Leafs will be back in action tomorrow, taking on the Montreal Canadiens. Don't go anywhere. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. Andy Petrillo alongside Patrick O'Sullivan. It's Friday. Whoa.
It's been a long week.
Another week in the books. Yeah, I was struggling yesterday. Kind of said some things today. Not sure if they made sense. Whatever.
We're both working tomorrow?
Yeah. Long days on the weekend. Ain't no rest for the wicked,
nope. My
friend. Leafs will be back in action against the Montreal Canadiens. I know there are a lot of people who still don't like overtime. I loved last night. I loved it. I loved the OT last night.
You think people don't like overtime?
I think because they don't like the fact that it feels, to some people, it still feels gimmicky. It still feels like something that you would see at an All-Star.
Yeah,
so why are you deciding? But you know what? It's about getting excited. It's about creating the excitement, and that's exactly what it does. Again, I have to, because, and I know I mentioned this at the top of the show, because I've been watching games on my own, because now watching games is more for work purposes. Last night was the first time I watched it with friends in a long time, and it was just even more thrilling when you're all yelling and jumping up and down at the same time. Like, you forget how fun it is to watch. And given the way it was back and forth last night, I just absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's entertaining. I think you could probably put me into the gimmick category. I enjoy watching it. Like, if I'm at home and I'm watching a bunch of different games, if a game's going into overtime, I will go and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a reflection at all of what you have as a team. So the idea that you're getting points through overtime and that influences where you finish in the standings, to me, isn't really a whole lot different than the shootout. It's a little closer, but that's not real hockey. So I guess that would be my thoughts on it. But it's great. It's great to watch because you're only seeing your best players.
Yeah. But I love it. It was great last night. So now the Leafs will be back in action against the Montreal Canadiens. Always an exciting game when they take each other on. But it'll be interesting to see because we had this conversation late last week, early this week. There's been talk of people thinking the Habs may not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm one of those people too. They are not stable right now. I think they're struggling mentally. I don't think Carey Price is anything close to what he was at the beginning of the year. He'll have one good game and then two or three where he's average. It's bizarre. I don't think they have confidence. I don't like the makeup of that team. I don't like their forwards in particular.
But so, the Habs always get up when they also play the Leafs. Like, if they're going to feel good about themselves, this is the game they'll get up for.
Even years where, like last year as an example, if the Leafs in Montreal play, like, you really don't know what to expect. It could go either way because there's something extra to those games. It's like when I played in Edmonton, we were garbage. But when we played Calgary or Vancouver, we had just as much of a chance to win those games as those teams did, and they were higher in the standings. So There's always that to it. I can't remember the last time, I guess it would have been 2013, when these two teams played when so much was on the line. It's the most important game these two teams have played in a long, long time for both teams.
Yeah. No, it makes it feel even that much more intense, that's for sure. Bob McKenzie had alluded to the fact that Mitch Marner was out on the ice earlier today before the rest of the group, so it looks like he's going to miss his fifth straight. Obviously still no Connor Carrick. Couple guys, looks like it could just be maintenance day. No Bozak, no JVR, no Connor Brown.
So, yeah, so the Sunday will be 11 days for his injury, I think. So he's just over a week right now.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when it happened, 2 weeks, I've been saying that. I can tell, too, by how he's skating, like the amount he's on the ice, going out early, all that other stuff. As soon as he stops going out early, he's close.
Yeah, when he's with the main group.
You have a normal practice.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not even practicing with the team because he can't even take a light bump in any drill, you're not close.
That's it.
And there's absolutely no reason to push with this kid. Let him get healthy.
All right. So back at it tomorrow. You can listen to the Leafs and Habs on TSN 1050, 5 p.m. pregame with yourself and Taddy. And puck drop will be at 7 p.m. with Bowen and Ralph. That's it for us, everyone. Have a great, safe weekend. Enjoy yourselves. That's Patrick O'Sullivan. I'm Annie Petrillo. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. It's the Scott MacArthur Show coming up next here on TSN 1050.